The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good evening. My name is Andrea Fella, for those of you who don't know me. Often when we engage in meditation practice, we kind of focus on or anticipate or perhaps look for states of calm, of peacefulness, of bliss, of just these really lovely states that can happen in our meditation. And we sometimes think that's the point of meditation. Tonight I'd like to talk about something a little more ordinary. And I'll talk about this from a couple of different directions. Mindfulness itself is a very ordinary quality of mind. It's simply something that happens to us all the time. We really couldn't get through our lives without being mindful. And by mindfulness, a good working definition of mindfulness is knowing what's happening while it's happening. And we couldn't get through our day without, in little moments at least, knowing what's happening while it's happening. There's always some awareness going on for us in our lives, but often that awareness isn't quite concurrent with the experience. So, for instance, I was talking to a friend a few years ago about the sound of mourning doves when they fly away. And I just was mentioning this, and I said, oh, you know that sound of mourning doves when they fly away? And she said, no, I don't know that sound. I said, oh, I'm sure you've heard it before. The next time, tomorrow, when you ride down the street on your bicycle, pay attention when you come up to a mourning dove and hear it fly away. And that sound, I'm sure that sound will be familiar to you. And she came back to me the next day, and she said, you're right, I'm very familiar with that sound. Now, that's the kind of awareness that is not conjoined with the actual experience. And we are in that kind of a state a lot. And also we have moments of mindfulness throughout our day. When we turn on the hot water on the faucet, if we put our hands under that water and we burn ourselves, we tend to know it's hot while it's hot. You know, that's a moment where we know, oh, that's hot, and our hands come out of the water. And that kind of moment of knowing what's happening while it's happening in the moment, which is what I would call mindfulness, it happens to us a lot in our day, but we don't typically pay attention to that quality of mindfulness, of knowing itself, because we're more interested in the thing that we are experiencing. We're interested in the hot water, or we're interested in seeing the car that's crossing in front of us on the road, rather than knowing, oh, I'm aware that there's a car crossing in front of me on the road. So mindfulness actually is kind of like the air we breathe. It happens to us all the time. It's as distinct from this kind of general awareness where we're not really aware in the moment while it's happening. This being aware in the moment happens to us all the time for just split seconds, over and over through the day. We couldn't navigate our day without it. We couldn't walk across the street without knowing what's happening in just little split seconds. But typically we leap onto what's happening and then start thinking about it, forming concepts about it. So this quality of mindfulness is actually a very ordinary quality. It's something that our minds do, that they know how to do. It's not an obscure or rarefied quality that is only found in experienced meditators. It's found in every one of us, and it's been around since we were children, this quality of mindfulness. So for now, for example, how hard is it for you to know the pressure of your butt on the floor or chair or cushion? How hard is it for you to be aware of the sound of my voice while I'm speaking? How hard is it for you to be aware of the experience, the sensations of your hands? Probably for most of you, as I mentioned each thing, you immediately just kind of became aware of it. Kind of like just bringing it into the moment, you become aware of it. So it's not a very obscure quality. It's just one that we don't typically think of as worth paying attention to in and of itself. I think it was really an amazing thing that the Buddha pointed to, that this quality of mindfulness is worth paying attention to. It's worth recognizing, it's worth cultivating, as opposed to using. I think we typically use mindfulness in our day. We're aware of something, we know we're aware of it, and we use that information to do something with what we're aware of, as opposed to recognizing the quality of mindfulness itself. And this is what the Buddha pointed to as being a very skillful quality, a quality that really supports our movement towards happiness. So it's a very ordinary quality, but it's a very powerful quality. Mindfulness is a very powerful quality when it is recognized and cultivated. It has the power to help us to understand what will lead us towards happiness and lead us away from suffering, lead us away from unskillful states and towards skillful states, where skill is defined as being essentially what leads us towards happiness. So to talk a little bit about how this ordinary quality of mindfulness can guide us in this direction, I'm just going to give a very brief definition of skillful and unskillful. Unskillful states of mind tend to be those states of mind that land us in suffering. They're states based in greed, aversion, and delusion. And our unskillful actions tend to be motivated by unskillful states of mind. Now, this is not a moral judgment around these unskillful states of mind. It's more of a practical thing. That if you want to be happy, if you want to become free from suffering, avoid unskillful states. Avoid unskillful actions. It's not so much about a moral right and wrong judgment. It's much more pragmatic. So, for instance, anger tends to be an unskillful mind state. When we are angry, it tends to create behaviors that are unskillful. We lash out at people and have communications that are unskillful. We may get physically violent out of anger. And these things will possibly harm others, and also the state of anger itself harms us. It's a form of suffering itself, just the state of anger itself. Skillful states of mind are those that tend to lead us towards happiness, towards non-suffering. And these are states based in non-greed, non-aversion, and non-delusion. These are states like compassion, generosity, kindness, tranquility, equanimity. And when we are motivated by these states of mind, our actions tend to be skillful. So how does mindfulness help to teach us this? Because my premise is essentially that mindfulness, the quality of mindfulness, helps us to learn what is skillful and what is unskillful. So essentially what happens to us if we are paying attention, if we're observing our experience and observing our mental states, we start to see that states motivated by greed, aversion, and delusion are suffering themselves. We see that when we pay attention with mindfulness to a state like anger, we begin to really feel the suffering of that state. At one point in my practice, I was working a lot with anger, and I began to recognize that I had this belief somehow that the anger was going to harm the person I was angry at. And that, you know, that was kind of the motive, essentially, for this anger. But in this particular situation, I was in the Peace Corps in the middle of the South Pacific, and the person that I was angry with happened to be in California. And it became pretty obvious relatively quickly that my anger wasn't going to do a thing to him, but it was eating me up. And I really got a taste of that teaching that the Buddha offers, that anger is like picking up a hot coal to throw at somebody. You burn yourself first. So with mindfulness, when we observe these unskillful states with mindfulness, we see the suffering of them. And there is a huge difference between just being caught in anger and kind of in a nebulous way feeling the suffering of that, and being mindful of the anger and being mindful of the suffering of the anger. There's a huge difference between those two. As we experience essentially the suffering of these unskillful mind states, the presence of mind around them is instructing us about this is unskillful, this is suffering, this is causing me pain and anguish to be in this state. So we learn through being mindful about the consequences of our states of mind. As we bring our mindful attention to these unskillful states of mind, of anger, of greed, of frustration, of hostility, impatience, it creates the conditions for these states to appear less frequently in our experience. It's like the mind learns this is a state that harms me. This is a state that causes suffering. And as it begins to see through mindfulness that it causes suffering, then as it is mindful and is negotiating, as our minds are mindful and as we're negotiating our lives, as we come upon states that are heading us in that direction, the mind will kind of more naturally begin to let go of those, because it knows where it's going. It knows it's leading into suffering. So that's how mindfulness teaches us about unskillful mind states. How does it work with skillful mind states? So as we pay attention to skillful mind states, compassion, kindness, generosity, joy, equanimity, tranquility, peacefulness, calm, we see that this state is beneficial for us. We see that it promotes our well-being. It promotes our happiness. And the mind tends to head in that direction. Through this quality of mindfulness, if we are aware of these states, the mind understands and realizes this. We begin to realize this is supportive. This is helpful. This leads towards a happy outcome, a skillful outcome. You might play with this a little bit around some particular state that some particular difficult state that you are familiar with, one that happens to you, maybe something like impatience or frustration. Try just being mindful of it. Typically, what happens to us when we're in these states is we are directed outwards towards the thing we're impatient about or frustrated about. And we think that that thing has to change in order for us to no longer be dissatisfied or frustrated or impatient. But if you observe the state long enough, if you just hang out with the state itself, at some point you'll be in the situation and you'll see that state of impatience or frustration just dissipate, even for a few moments. And you will see that the suffering of the situation is not about the world needing to be a certain way, but it is about the frustration itself. It's about the impatience itself. When the frustration goes away, when the wanting the situation to be different goes away, the suffering goes away. This is another way that the mindfulness teaches us about skillful and unskillful states of mind. I like to think of mindfulness as kind of being like a wedge. If we are mindful of our experience, it's like this wedge of mindfulness cuts a path through our experience and directs us and guides us in a direction that is conducive to our well-being. And that doesn't mean that we won't make mistakes, but that's actually part of the practice. We make mistakes, we see the suffering, the consequences. We're just mindful, keep being mindful of what's happening. We see the consequences of our mistakes and we learn from them. So this very ordinary quality of mindfulness has this power to guide us through our lives and essentially direct us towards well-being. So this very ordinary quality of mind is well worth our attention. So I've talked for a little while now about the ordinariness of this quality of mindfulness, that it's just a very natural quality that when we bring our attention to it becomes a very powerful force in our lives. Now I'd like to spend some time talking about the ordinariness of our experience itself and how this can be the ground for transformation. We don't actually need to get to exalted states in meditation for our meditation and our mindfulness practice to be transforming. Our ordinary, mundane, day-to-day experience is all we need. There's a couple of different ways that the Buddha talked about our everyday, ordinary experience. He talked about essentially what we are as human beings. And there are two main approaches that I'll talk about tonight. One is the teaching on the six sense bases, and one is the teaching on the five aggregates. So the teaching on the six sense bases. This is essentially a way of understanding our experience as coming in through the sense doors. And the six sense bases consist of the five usual senses that we normally think of seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, and touching, and the sense door of the mind, which is the sixth sense base in Buddhist psychology. So each of these sense bases is understood through the part of our body that is the sense base itself, so the eye, the ear, the nose, the tongue, the tactile sensations, the nerves, the skin, and then the mind. I don't think it was exactly equated with the brain, but we can think of it that way for now. And then there are the objects of these sense bases. There are the sights, the sounds, the smells, the tastes, the touches, and the objects of mind. So all the thoughts, all the ideas, all the images, emotions, moods, all of those are things happening in the mind. And with each of these sense bases, so let's just take the eye and a sight, for example, the eye and the wall for me sitting here looking out. There's a third component, which is the consciousness of that. As the eye and the sight come together, there's the consciousness of the seeing. So there's essentially the eye, the object of sight, and then there's the seeing, which is the consciousness of seeing. One of my teachers in Burma described each of these sense bases with an analogy. He talked about the physical sense base, the bodily sense base, the eye, for example, as being like a striker where you would strike a match. And the object of the sight is like the match itself. And the two come together, you strike the match against the striker, and the flame appears. And that's like the consciousness happening as the two come together. So all of our experience can be understood as coming in through one of these six sense bases. Again, this is very ordinary. This is just what's going on for us all the time. Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and things happening in the mind. It's just this continual flow of stuff going on over and over and over again. One of my teachers, Joseph Goldstein, says with some regularity, only six things ever happen. These six things over and over and over again. Now, we happen to like particular configurations of these six things, and we don't like some other configurations of these six things. So we need to work with that. But for the purposes of mindfulness, it makes absolutely no difference what of these six things are happening. Anything will do if you are mindful of it. Anything serves as the ground for freedom. Any experience at all. There's one teaching where the Buddha actually explicitly addresses this. This is a short reading, so I'll read this whole piece to you. He says, "All things are rooted in desire. They come to actual existence through attention, originate from contact, and converge on feelings. The foremost of all things is concentration. All things are mastered by mindfulness. Their peak is wisdom, their essence, liberation. All things merge in the deathless, and Nibbana is their culmination." This is all things he's talking about here, all experiences, any sight, sound, smell, taste, touch. All things, he says, are mastered by mindfulness. When we are mindful of these things, their essence is liberation. They lead towards freedom. With this ordinary quality of mindfulness and this ordinary experience, it leads us towards freedom. As we see this process of just seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, touching, and stuff going on in the mind over and over again, as we're just aware of this, we start to see that it is just a process. And this understanding also begins to help us towards letting go of all of the unskillful ways in which we respond to things. As we start to see there's just this process, this flow going on, there's not really anybody doing this flow. It's just a natural course of events from being in a human body that this flow of seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, touching, and things going on in the mind happens to us over and over again. On one retreat, I began to get a taste of this as I was hanging out just in the experience of seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, touching, and things in the mind. Just hanging out there. And I began to see that there was nobody there doing anything. It was just this process unfolding. And it was such a relief. Such a huge relief. Not to have this burden of me needing to do something. Of me needing to react to something. I think this is one of the interesting aspects of this teaching around not self. We tend to think it sounds like something yucky or horrible. I'm not here, what do you mean? You know. But the actual experience of it is a relief. Such a relief to not be comparing and judging and needing and wanting and holding on to things. There's another way that the Buddha talked about our experience. He talked about it through the six sense bases. And he had another teaching called the five aggregates. And this one is an interesting counterpoint to the teaching on the six sense bases. I like this kind of contrast between these two. The teaching on the five aggregates is more focused on the mind. The teaching on the six sense bases, five out of the six sense bases are physical, bodily senses, and there's the mind, which is the sixth. In the teaching on the five aggregates, there is the body, which is one, and the other four have to do with the mind. Consciousness, feeling, perception, and mental formations. So this term aggregate sounds kind of technical, but it's just translating a term in Pali, khanda, that means group or heap or bundle. So it's a very non-technical term in the Pali. So, you know, if that term seems to disturb you, just think of it as group or heap. So there's the group of the body, there's the group of perception, there's the group of feeling, of mental formations, and of consciousness. And essentially, what the Buddha says is that all of our experience falls into one of these five heaps. We can look at our experience, anything that comes into our experience, and categorize it as being in one of these five heaps. So I like this counterpoint between these two, because it offers two different ways to explore our experience. One which is very body-centric, and one which is more focused around how the mind functions. So this teaching on the aggregate is really an exploration or an instruction about how the mind, what are the different functions of the mind? So there's the consciousness function, which is just the function of mind that knows things. Just this bare knowing of things as they come into our experience. Then there's perception, which is the part of the mind that recognizes things, that essentially labels things. And there's many different levels to this part of our the way our mind functions. It's like this book can be perceived as square and brown. It can also be perceived as a book. This function of the mind of perception, essentially, from the time we're very young, we start taking in sense experience. So we take in this book from many different angles. We take in all books from many different angles. And it's very different each direction you look at it. And you've got the sense contact, you've got the way it looks from all these different angles. And our minds are designed to essentially create concepts out of this sense data. This is a function of the mind, to create these concepts out of sense data. This is perception. That is what perception is. That's that function of mind, perception. Then there's feeling. And feeling here is just the bare aspect of whether our experience is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. There's a certain part of our mind that just recognizes experience as pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, just in a moment of contact. Every single experience is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So I think of these three, of consciousness, feeling, and perception, as being the bare, kind of bare part of our experience. It's how we see things, label them, know what's happening. And then on top of this is what are called mental formations or volitional formations. And this is all the ideas, thoughts, beliefs, intentions, views, emotions, moods. Everything else in the mind essentially comes into this category, into this heap of mental formations. So in my experience, a lot of our difficulty in our experience, when we start getting reactive to things, that's in the mental formations part of this, it's in the mental formations heap. And if we can begin to contact just the bare perception and knowing and feeling of experience, we are closer to, we are experiencing things at a level where that reactivity is not so predominant. So it's very helpful to just see if we can contact our bare experience. Just the perceiving, just the knowing, just the feeling. Now these three really can't be distinguished too much from each other. They're really kind of tied together. There's even one teaching the Buddha gives on this as well that was just kind of like an aha for me, because I was trying to figure out, well, how do I tell these apart, and can I just experience one and not the other? And I got confused about them. And then I read this, which helped me out. Feeling, perception, and consciousness. These states are conjoined, not disjoined, and it is impossible to separate each of these states from the other in order to describe the difference between them. So it's almost like these three states of feeling, perception, and consciousness, is like three different aspects of our bare experience, of just the sense data coming in. It's three different aspects of that sense data. So sometimes you may be recognizing or experiencing the feeling side. Sometimes you may be recognizing the perceiving side, and sometimes the knowing side. But in any case, if you're touching into this more bare aspect of experience, again, which is very ordinary, it's just the bare sense and raw data that is coming into our lives moment to moment. Every moment of experience has this knowing, this feeling, this perception. Every single moment has this quality. But as we begin to touch into these three of these heaps, it begins to point us to that non-reactivity, that non-judgmental quality, a clarity, an acceptance. This awareness is kind of like a mirror. It's the reflecting qualities of a mirror are unchanged by what it's reflecting. It doesn't matter what the mirror is reflecting. You can know something about the reflecting quality of the mirror by looking at how clearly it reflects the object. And the reflecting quality of the mirror is unchanged by what it reflects. And the knowing quality of the mind is kind of like that. It doesn't matter what it is knowing. It's still got that quality of clarity, of non-judgmentalism. It's got an accepting quality. These qualities of the knowing are unchanged by what is known. So it can be interesting in terms of exploring this knowing, exploring, trying to come into contact with things that are just known in experience. Looking in your day-to-day life, in your normal, everyday, ordinary experiences, can you begin to recognize when you are aware or mindful? This is coming back to what I was talking about at the very beginning. Beginning to recognize this quality of mindfulness itself begins to point us to this quality of knowing. When we are aware of the mindfulness, we begin to become more familiar with this feeling of knowing, this feeling of awareness itself. And again, it happens to us all the time. You're reaching for a glass and you're aware. You just kind of wake up into awareness. Can you begin to recognize these moments? It can be interesting to explore this when things are pretty much just neutral. You know, you're sitting at a stoplight or you're just making your breakfast or, you know, just doing sort of the normal, everyday, mundane things of life. Can you recognize when or whether you are aware? Asking yourself perhaps, am I aware? What am I aware of? If you can ask yourself, am I aware? You are aware. So just touch it. Can you touch into what does that feel like now to be aware? When you begin to touch into that, you get a little bit closer to that quality of knowing, which has these qualities of non-judgmental, accepting. In every moment of experience, we can either recognize the reflecting quality of the mind or be aware of the object that is reflected. And often when we are aware of the object that is reflected, we start reacting to it. So when we can land a little more in the actual knowing, the recognizing, awake, I am awake, this is what awake feels like. Explore it right now, in this moment. Are you aware? What are you aware of? very simple, very ordinary, very, very ordinary quality. But as we get familiar with it, it begins to point us to a balanced mind, an accepting mind, a non-judgmental mind. As we begin to get familiar with this state of knowing, of being aware, we can begin to touch into what I call ordinary mind. It's a state of mind that is completely ordinary consciousness, ordinary perception. You know, no altered state. You're just in your normal everyday life. But you are aware. And there can be a feeling or a sense of clarity as we get very familiar with that state. And we can land in that kind of a state for a little bit longer periods of time. It begins to show us the kind of luminous or illuminating quality of awareness, the clarity, the clear qualities of awareness. This quality of awareness of knowing just illuminates what it knows. And that's its job, to just illuminate. As we can hang out in that state for a little bit longer periods of time, we touch into a kind of extraordinary feeling of bliss. Because as we are more continuously mindful like that, what happens is that the hindrances fall away. The hindrances of aversion, of greed, of drowsiness, of sloth and torpor, of restlessness and of doubt, those all fall away. And there's a state that's called the bliss of seclusion when those hindrances have fallen away. And this kind of opening to this state of just being. And we can work towards this in our daily lives through beginning to cultivate and recognize what is it like to be aware. Getting familiar with that state and beginning to pull it along in our lives so that there's a little more continuity to it. And as we feel this bliss of seclusion, it's like, wow, this is amazing, this mindfulness, this quality of being aware of what's happening while it's happening feels quite extraordinary. And then as we keep going in our practice over time, it just, even that feeling of extraordinariness goes away, and it's just ordinary. It's just ordinary, nothing special, but it's aware, it's awake. It tends towards the skillful. It tends to lead us towards well-being. So this very ordinary quality of mindfulness, attending to our ordinary everyday experience, this is what leads us to freedom. So I've talked the entire time, so there's not any time for questions. So thank you for your attention.